Howdy, folks. It's 5150 for Hacker Public Radio. And a few months ago, when I first installed CentOS on my little laptop, I discussed doing maybe a series of observations of what I learned just getting into Arch from a newbie perspective. I thought that might be more accessible to someone who wanted to move from another distribution, say Fedora, Debian, or Ubuntu, over to Arch. And I really haven't followed through on that. I'm now to the point where I'm pretty comfortable with the package management system, which, you know, really that seems to be the thing you have to learn when you get into a new distro. At least you're going to do it from the command line. So the pre-packaged graphical installer, it seems to me when you jump from one, you know, family of Linux to another family of Linux, basically what you have to learn is the package management system. And I'm going to go back and do that, but I'm going to call this episode one of a series for HPR that I've decided to call, "So You've Just Installed Arch Linux, Now What? Arch Lessons from a Newbie." And I said this will be episode one. And, well, of course, last spring, like I said, I installed CentOS. I started off this laptop. I've relayed this before. I installed full Arch and got it running on from the command line. I mean, went through the whole Arch wiki, got a working install, and then when I booted back into the hard drive, my wired network connection, the Ethernet card, which worked just fine through the installation, it didn't work. And I said, well, you know, and I'd taken, I wouldn't say took 2 days. Well, I mean, it was part of several days with failed start attempts and whatnot. I mean, the actual last install when I installed everything only took a couple hours. But I'd spent a few days on the mess around on the project, and just that was kind of the last straw that I couldn't get right back into it. And so the machine set for a while, and then a month later, I decided, okay, let's start over again with CentOS, see how that goes. I've already talked about that. I don't know what I'm talking about again. But, okay, so, CentOS, and I had it working on the computer for, 6 months, maybe? I guess it was 4 months. And then, of course, CentOS developers decided that Mint's release packages in Cinnamon were just getting too long in the tooth, and they needed to move on to something else. And so, CentOS began Antergos. And what I found out right away, though, is this laptop's one I used to take with me on service calls. So it wasn't my everyday computer, and I went out and one day and tried to do an update, and it told me all the repositories, or at least all the CentOS specific repositories, were no longer found. I went to URLs manually, and sure enough, they weren't there. And I said, "Oh, great!" So I did a little searching on the internet, and yeah, there's a link on antergos.com. So big heading, "We're back." Link is in the show notes. I don't want to read the whole link out here. Well, it's not too bad. Antergos, that's antergos.com/antergos-2013-05-12- "We're," and no apostrophe, because I couldn't put apostrophe in a URL, so WERE-back. And that explains how they did the conversion. If you scroll down, right there it has conversion. Okay, you're on CentOS. This is what you need to do to convert to Antergos. And at this point, by the time this plays, if you haven't done the conversion, I guess you're probably not interested in doing it. But there were, at least for me on my machine, they kind of left a couple steps out. So, and I'm not going to say this URL on the air, but on the forums, Antergos forums, it's going to be in the show notes. If you scroll down, well, I mean, it's my top that I posted. It said, "Oh, you know, I went through this. This is what I'm getting." And they went through, "Oh, yeah, this is what you have to do manually to get it to work." So it seemed to me like it'd be anything specific to my situation. It's just perhaps that little tutorial page is not as complete as it could be. So, and I didn't notice it right away. I went to install a package outside the repository, and I'd been used to using Yowert, yet another repository tool. I mean, you have to install it. I mean, Pacman's is the normal package manager for Arch. There are packages that are set up outside the normal repositories by users. It's sort of like using a PPA in Ubuntu, which I think everybody has probably done, and Verizo is, you know, use at your own risk. So I'd use Yowler because it's a quick and easy way to do it. But, well, it is easy, but for some reason, after I made the conversion to Antergos and ran Yowler to try to get a package, it told me, well, command not found. It was installed in there, and that still seems a little funny to me. I could understand that maybe I couldn't have updated or something after I changed, gone to the new repos, but it doesn't explain why the command was installed and now it's not. And somehow going through the conversion to Antergos, there were like three CINAHL specific repos originally, and they've got, I think there's now one for Antergos on top of your normal Arch repos. And I don't know how I missed it, but I looked back in the pacman.conf, and yeah, that new Antergos repo wasn't there. So that very well could have been part of my problem. I didn't catch it till after I'd gone through steps I'm going to relate to you. But so, yeah, it wasn't there. Couldn't figure out why. So, and before on podcasts and on Outcast Planet, you know, people have told me why, talked about using Yowler. Well, I guess it's one of the first time I've also related that the problem I had with LightDM and Unity Greeter. I'd done a package installation with Yowler and rebooted, and suddenly I no longer had a login screen. And at length, I found I had to go in and make changes to Grub too, so I could do a single user login and then go and install GDM, which fixed everything. And apparently it was a timing issue. I've told you guys this before. It was a timing issue that actually LightDM and Unity Greeter were, since I had an SSD, things were happening too fast for those programs to catch up and display the login screen. But I've been on Outcast Planet and said, well, I don't know what happened. You know, all I did was install something through Yowler, and then suddenly next day I turned the machine on and I don't have a login screen. And at the time, some guys like Art V61 and Peter64 were saying, well, you know, real men don't use Yowler. They do manual package installs from the AUR anyway. So I kind of thought that away. I thought that learning how to manually install packages from the AUR, I would wait, and that would be an exercise from when I would be a little more confident with Arch. So when this came up, Yowler's no longer there for some reason, I said, well, this is probably a perfect opportunity then to learn how to manually install packages. And I'm bringing to you, it turns out wasn't nearly as daunting a process as I thought it would be. So your first step may be to ensure that you really have to resort to the Arch user repositories that you are to install app that you're looking for. So DocViewer, it was installed with my version of Arch, and I've been using it to access PDFs, but really I preferred Ocular that I found installed by default in other distros. And I tried sudo pacman -S Ocular, and that failed to find the package. I assumed I was going to have to look for it out in AUR. However, a Google search on Arch and install in Ocular revealed the package I needed was KDE Graphics-Ocular, which I could install from the standard Arch repos. Now, that probably brings in, if you're trying to make your system small and you know, you've got a GNOME-based system and you don't have any cute applications installed, then you might want to... I guess that's probably the only version of Ocular, so you just may have to make that decision to reduce system bloat by not installing a Qt-based application. Okay, once you determine the package you need exists in the AUR and not in the standard repos, you need to locate the appropriate package build. And your Google search may have already taken care of that. The URL should be in the form http://aur.archlinux.org/packages/, and then the package name. For the sake of example, let's go with https://aur.archlinux.org/packages/google-chrome. The Chromium, a fully open source version, is already in the standard Arch repos, but if you want Google Chrome, you're going to have to find an AUR. On that page, find the link labeled Download the Tarball, and it will be a file ending in .tar.gz. Before downloading a file, the Arch Whiskey instructions for manually installing packages from the AUR, and that's at http://wiki.archlinux.org/index.php/arch_user_repository, recommend creating a designated folder to put them in. They suggest creating a builds folder in your home directory. I like my downloads on download folder. I usually have a subfolder under downloads called packages for download packages, I think. So I stuck my builds folder under downloads rather than having it in my home directory, but that's really neither here nor there, and it's completely a matter of your own discretion. Now, first, before you install the package, if you have a multi-core machine, you may be able to take advantage of a slight compiler performance increase by making adjustments to your /etc/makepkg.conf, makepackage.conf. Go scroll down to line that starts with CFlags equal, and it should have a first parameter that would look like -march=x86_64 or -march=i686. In other words, 32-bit versus 64-bit OS. Now, whichever it is, change it to -march=native and eliminate the second parameter that reads -mtune=generic. This will cause GCC to auto-detect your processor types, because you could have a 64-bit processor and it be a single core. So then edit the next line, which begins with CXX flags, to read CXX flags equals double quote $ open parentheses C flags close parentheses double quote. And that just causes the CXX flags to echo settings already in C flags. Both lines should have been the same when you opened up the file. At least they were on mine and they were on all examples that I saw. Now the instructions for the part I've just gone over for changing your makepackage.conf, and you should look at those instructions to just blindly listening to what I'm telling you, but those are at http://wiki.archlinux.org/index.php/makepackage.conf, makepkg.conf. Okay, before installing the first AUR package, you will have to install, and you may already have these packages installed on your system, base-devel, D-E-V-E-L, so in other words, sudo pacman, space, -S, base-devel. Okay, now look for that .tar.gz file you download in your builds directory. I'm still going to use Google Chrome as an example, so the file you download will be google-chrome-tar-gz. Now unravel the tarball with /tar/xvzf/google-chrome.tar.gz. Now in your builds folder, you should have a new directory named google-chrome. Drop down in that folder from the command line. Now again, ArchWiki stresses, since user repos are not standard, or not trusted as standard ones, it might be a good idea to open the pkg build file and look for malicious bash instructions. Do the same with the .install file. Once you're satisfied everything in there is legitimate, you can make the new package with make space -lowercase s. And the dash S switch lets the compiler resolve any unmet dependencies by prompting you for your sudo password. Now you'll have a new tarball in the format of application name, dash application version number, dash package revision number, dash architecture.pkg.tar.xz. And again, following our Google Chrome example, the file name resulting was google-chrome-27-0-1453. I'm sorry. google-chrome-27.0.143.110-1-86_64.pkg.tar.xz. And we can install that with Pac-Man's upgrade function, which is Pac-Man, of course, sudo Pac-Man, unless you're already logged in as root. Sudo Pac-Man space dash uppercase U space google-chrome-27 the file name. And this command will install the new package and create an RPM. That's all you have to do. That's manually installing a package from the Arch AUR. Okay, this is a second little Arch tip. Before running Arch, I didn't realize spell checking was centrally configured in Linux. I always assumed it was in each individual application, just like it is in Windows. But after installing Arch, I noticed autocorrect wasn't working anywhere. It was the highest priority, but at length I looked for a solution, and I found LibreOffice and most browsers rely on Hunspell for spell checking functions. That's Hunspell. Get it working, you just need to install Hunspell and the Hunspell library appropriate for your language. So in my case, it was Pac-Man space dash uppercase S space Hunspell dash EN. Okay, that's it for Arch tips this time. That's completely unrelated, but I wanted to do a little review on the Straight Talk service for track phones. So yeah, I've got the cheap prepaid track phone month to month. I go in Walmart and buy a card to prepaid recharge it for next month. And you know, I picked that. I wanted a smartphone for it. I went to Philly, and they had a couple, but the only one in reliable service in my area was Straight Talk and track phone. Bought it at Walmart, and for $35 a month, they advertise unlimited data, talk, and text. Now, the only drawback, which I didn't realize before I bought the phone, I guess I didn't look in the fine print, is that any form of tethering, whether it be wired or wireless, violates Straight Talk's terms of service. You know, I wonder if Chromecast would count as tethering. Anyway, for some people, no tethering would be an immediate deal breaker, I realize. And most of the places I go and work, I have Wi-Fi available, though I can see the advantages of tethering, but the one thing I'm really most interested in tethering for is if I'm working on a computer on-site that I know is infected, it would give another level of security if I didn't have to connect that computer into the network to download anti-malware updates when I'm trying to fix it from inside the operating system, which usually I don't. I use a Linux antivirus rescue disk, usually several, but you know, Malwarebytes does work fairly good in most cases if you just want to do the quickest thing that you can. I'll try to clean up a system. And the budget phone I bought only supports 3G, so I'm not really in the habit of streaming media to it, much less outputting that media to another device. In fact, I tried Hulu, and it was just a slideshow on 3G. So that doesn't mean I don't use my available bandwidth. I put a 16 gig SD card in the phone, and I started using it as an additional pipeline to download Linux ISOs. So in other words, I could download one on my home system, download one on the phone at the same time. You know, or any other type of big file I might want to download. And of course, anything that's on the phone, I can transfer over to my network using ES File Explorer. And I did download several gigs in the first month to test the meaning of unlimited. You know, because you folks know unlimited usually does not mean unlimited. It only means unlimited if you don't use anywhere near your theoretical bandwidth. Okay, so towards the end of the first month, once, and then after I bought the prepaid card for the next month and renewed it, I had off and on again data connection. In fact, I was, you know, that second month I was customer for about 3 days. Well, you know, they're looking at the traffic and assumed I'm tethering, or they have some hidden thing to unwritten policy that people are naughty about actually using the bandwidth that they're guaranteed are getting knocked off the network. But I found out that the data network comes back when I turn the phone off and on again. So, you know, thanks to the wisdom of the IT crowd, that seems to fix it every single time when I don't have a data connection. And I do get on the phone, see my home network, I only get about, if I'm download a file, if I'm lucky, 45 megabits a second, and I was getting 3 times that on the phone over the 3G connection, so I thought it was great. But of course, not everything is perfect, and most of the stuff that I find that I download over a direct link doesn't match the MD5 sum check when I get it downloaded. I can always torrent over the phone, and torrents are almost always, by their nature, do match the MD5 sum when you get them downloaded. But unfortunately, torrenting brings download speed about down to the same speed as my network. I've never seen it go over about 50 megabytes per second. So it's still a second, another option sometimes. And sometimes it does seem like, unless the screen's on, the connection seems to break. You come back and find out the download has been interrupted. So I've had a lot better luck. Well, actually better speed too. Downloading at night, because probably I'm the only one using the 3G network at night. So set up a download before I go to bed and let it run on the phone. Sometimes that works out pretty well. But the main thing I want to get across is, now I can honestly say that when Straight Talk says unlimited, they mean unlimited, because I would think if they were going to throttle me, they would be doing it by now. Okay, well, I'm 5150, and this is another episode of HPR on the Books. If you need to reach me other than just replying in the comments for this episode on the HPR page, you can find my contact information at thebigredswitch.drupalgardens.com. And, well, have a wonderful life until we meet here again.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.